Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes to President's Club. I'm your host, Nick Sigelski, joined with my co-host, Jen Allen Knuth. And today we've got Caitlin Zylstra, who is an enterprise AE over at Deel. Jen, why should people listen?
We've all lost those deals where we have a great champion who all of a sudden falls apart at the finish line. So Caitlin does an amazing job teaching us how we work with our champions, how we work with these larger buying groups to make sure we see the deal through all the way to the finish line.
And a three, a two, a one. Don't let this episode fall apart and don't let your deals fall apart because Caitlin was so kind-hearted and generous where she actually put together a template for free of the exact internal prep doc that she talks about in this episode. So if you want to steal the way that Caitlin is prepping her execs and SMEs when she brings them into a deal, there's a link in the show notes. Go get it. It's free and check it out and enjoy this episode. Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. If you get an email and the action required on that email is going to take you less than 2 minutes to do, do it on the spot. It's not worth adding it to your to-do list, having to look at the item, remember what you need to do. That's going to take you more than 2 minutes anyway. So do it on the spot, get it off your plate. Now, we documented our best templates and tips to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that documentation for free at the link in the show notes. Today's deal acceleration tip is brought to you by DemandBase. If you want to save a ton of time as a salesperson and be more relevant, I recommend you prioritize your prospecting by those prospects who are showing buyer intent. It'll keep you from making a bunch of noise and reaching out to folks who aren't in market, and instead you'll reach out to folks who are in market. Now, we built a bunch of templates to help you prioritize, accelerate, and win with DemandBase, and there is a link to those wonderful templates in today's show notes.
Gong's going to help you run the 5-minute drill at the end of all of your calls today. At the end of a call, pressure test the prospect with 3 questions. Number 1, do you want to buy? If the answer is no, why set a next step at all? Number 2, when do you want to buy? If it's tomorrow, we got to move fast. Number 3, how do you buy? Based on the first 2 answers, I can now adequately decide if and how I set a next step. And this was stolen from the Gong 30 MPC 90-minute masterclass, and you can steal it too in the show notes.
Here's my secret to being a sales superhuman. It's auto reminders for everything. If I expect any reply from a prospect, I press Command H, and Superhuman pops it right back into my inbox if I don't get a reply in 2 days. That means if you handle an objection, if you suggest times for a meeting, or if you ask for cuts back on red lines, always create a 2-day reminder task and assume they will not reply. So if you want to follow up on time every time, you can get a free month of Superhuman by checking it out in the show notes.
All right, Caitlin, welcome to the show. We start every single episode with your top 3 actionable takeaways. So let's get your 3.
Thanks, Nip. So number 1, going beyond the basics to build a strong POV before your first meeting, critically important. So the 3 ways that I do this is meeting with previous users, meeting with a non-competitive sales team that's been working with the account or has an open opportunity with the account. And then my personal favorite is actually reaching out to a top performing end user to pick their brain on how to break into the account and meet with the right individuals.
Boom. Beautiful. What's number 2?
Number 2. So to ensure that your external meetings are a success, my number 1 takeaway is that internal preparation is just as important as external preparation. And one of my biggest things that I love to do is creating a framework on how to run external meetings efficiently by giving the internal cross-functional teams that you're going to be pulling into these meetings critical things that they need to stick to. One of those would be having them understand what the business challenges are for a prospect. What executive priority does it tie back to? What is the cost if they don't do or move forward with your solution? And then the 2 biggest takeaways are, what does success look like for that specific meeting? And what role do you want that cross-functional partner or executive team to play in that meeting?
Beautiful. Round us out. What's number 3?
Number 3 is always a personal favorite. It's how do you pressure test your champion throughout a sales cycle to make them earn the right of the title of being your champion? The best way that I've learned how to do this is actually within my past failures. So one of the biggest key takeaways I have is laying out what a successful evaluation looks like and then having them show me the gaps of what some of my false assumptions might be and say, here's what it's going to look like internally for us to mirror what your successful evaluation path looks like. And how do we mutually quarterback this together, internally and externally, to make it a success?
Ooh, I'm going to have to steal that one. And I'm going to have so much success with it because I've got a lot of failures, Caitlin. Let me tell you. I want to start with one of the failures that I've had that sort of relates to your tip about when you're bringing on other colleagues of yours to help with a sale, whether that's an executive, a subject matter expert, etc. I think back to a deal I was working once where I involved my CEO in the deal, and I had him come talk to the managing partner of this law firm that I was selling to, because the managing partner had heard some rumblings that our customer support had gone downhill, and the CEO had literally just rolled out a strategic plan to improve those things. And I was like, awesome, CEO can explain this great turnaround that's happening and what it means for this guy and develop a relationship. And we went into the meeting, and the CEO talked about basically the opposite of what I wanted him to share with the customer. And I'm sitting here just pouring sweat in that meeting, thinking this ain't good. And we didn't end up moving forward with that deal. I want to ask you about some of the specifics about, like, what does it actually sound like when you're saying, hey, this is what success sounds like, or this is what the hesitations the buyer has, because I want to get really, really crispy in terms of like what it sounds like that you're sharing with your execs and other stakeholders.
Absolutely. So while I'm meeting with them internally, I've put together a framework of kind of these four buckets of what they need to understand before they go and walk into this meeting with an executive. It's so easy for executives or any member of your cross-functional team to basically give their perspective on how to use their solution because they're using their solution every day. So for example, I would sell a tool that helps with pipeline visibility and forecast accuracy. Well, the way my executive is going to leverage our own internal tool mirrors what their own KPIs and what their own revenue model is for their company in the first place. Versus if I were going to meet with another company who's maybe tracking things on a monthly basis versus a quarterly or annual basis, their talk track's not going to resonate with this company because they're not mirroring their workflows when it comes to assessing their pipeline, assessing their forecast reviews. So a mistake I've made in the past is said, hey, you know, Mr. and Mrs. CRO, let's come in. You're going to be meeting the CRO of X company. Leverage and explain to them how you leverage the tool every day to make it so that you're really good at your own job. And the problem was, is they were using their own language, their own lingo, and their own workflows that had nothing to do with how the company was running their business. And so what I now do is I say, when I'm going to an internal, an executive, and I'm preparing them for the meeting, I say things like, success for this meeting is going to be that the CRO walks away with not only understanding how our solution is going to give them better insights into their pipeline management and better forecast accuracy, but they're going to walk away with knowing exactly how they're going to do that for the specific needs and challenges of their business.
That's so smart. I want to highlight the little nuance that you did there. You talked about how you'll pull in your CRO to show, hey, here's how I look at my pipeline and predict where the business is going from a forecasting perspective. And if your CRO is looking at that on a quarterly basis, but your prospect looks at stuff on a monthly, weekly, daily basis, they're going to get confused. And it is your responsibility, it's our responsibility as salespeople to speak the language that our customer understands and translate the way that we think about things into words that the customer understands, because then they understand so much faster. And most sales meetings, in my opinion, fail because of indigestion. Folks don't understand what you're sharing versus starvation. You're not sharing enough.
I have another example about that. I think one of the biggest mistakes that I find that sales individuals are doing is they have this fear that they are no longer running their cycle or their opportunity when an executive gets pulled in. Mistake number one, like, you are the quarterback of your opportunity of the account for a reason. You are the CEO of your business and the opportunity. You are leveraging your executives because they are a resource to help you get the deal across the finish line. People forget that your executive isn't in the 50 to 60 meetings that you've been having with your champion or that other executive or VP off the bat. And so there's this fear that they have to take this back seat and let their executive run the whole meeting. And that's when sometimes, unfortunately, executives take it down a rabbit hole. So one of the biggest things someone has taught me and what I found super successful is giving that individual a specific role and saying your role in this meeting is to provide the perspective of the CRO, but from a monthly standpoint, not the one that you're used to, which is a quarterly standpoint. And tell them things that they shouldn't be doing. Hey, it's going to fail if you go start talking about some new product we're about to roll out in 4 quarters from now. It's not going to help the situation.
So it's the perfect lead into my question, which was, you know, the best laid plans can still go awry, right? So let's say you've got a call where you've planned with your executive, but let's say they're a founder, they're in love with their product, and they start going down a rabbit hole and you can sense the body language from the prospect, like, hey, this is not what they're looking to hear. How do you toe that line of still being respectful to your executive partner, but also making sure, to your point, that you're taking control of the conversation because you are the one that has it? So what do you do in those situations to kind of rein back control?
One of the biggest things is I always try and lead with transparency. Remember, your executives hired you for a reason. They know that you're running the deal the way that you want to run the deal, and they don't want to derail or make it a failure. So I always set the expectation with the CEO. Let's say it's the CEO I'm bringing in or the CRO. And I say, hey, there is a time and place for us to talk about where we're taking the company in the future, right? Or what we've been doing across X amount of our customers. But we only have, this might be our only opportunity to have 30 minutes with this individual throughout this entire sales cycle. And so I really want to ensure that we hit on these 3 critical things that are going to be make it and break it for them specifically to make this decision on whether or not we're the right partner for them. So how I just do it is ensuring, just saying, you know, there's a time and a place. If it gets to an example or a scenario where the CEO wants to spend additional time with you and talk about a product roadmap, great. But for this specific meeting, success is going to equal X, Y, and Z.
Caitlin, when we were talking on the prep for this episode, you had this wonderful prep document that I hope maybe we can share with the audience. We'll have to talk about that. You had some stuff on there like, yes, you had what success looks like. You had details about, hey, here's what the customer's tech stack looked like. You had other stuff like, hey, here's hesitations that the buyer might have about moving forward. I'm wondering if you can give sort of the quick punch list of the things that you include on there. You don't have to go in super deep detail. I'm just curious if folks wanted to like build their own, some of those key things that you put on there.
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest things right now, especially given the market, is whoever your final buying committee might be, or the executive buyer who's going to be signing off on this at the end. What I have always found is that the number one thing that they care about is, how do I ensure that my solution is not going to become shelfware, right? They want to ensure that you have a 30, 60, 90-day plan on rolling out your solution in an effective manner so that you're driving 100% adoption right off the bat. They don't want to do what they've probably done in the past, was buy 2 or 3 different solutions. No one's going to own those internally. And then the individuals at the company are just never going to leverage them. So one of the biggest things I feel like individuals have been almost leaving out or not leaning into throughout an initial sales cycle is, what are those apprehensions that your buying committee or your CFO or CEO is going to want to take into consideration when weighing whether or not this is the right decision to make the purchase or not? And a big one of that is kind of the whole post-sale side of the process, which is like, okay, what happens when we do become a partner? So I always want to ensure that one of the biggest apprehensions is that, like, what happens once we become partners, and what does it look like that you're going to ensure that we have a successful deployment and people are going to actually leverage this tool on a day-to-day basis?
So one of the things that you've referenced a couple of times, and a place where I really, really admire your thinking, is around how you manage champions. I'm going to ask you like a really straightforward, potentially stupid question, but how do you know you even have a champion? Like, how do you know this is the right person to lean all the way forward into when you're working a deal at the size and scope of yours?
What I like to do is I like to ask the champion themselves, why do we need to ensure that this evaluation is successful? We need to ensure that this evaluation is successful, most likely because there's obviously an executive priority that you're tying this evaluation to. And if the company gets that wrong, there's obviously repercussions. They're going to be living in their existing pain. They're going to lose revenue because they're not fixing the problem. But for the champion specifically, I want to ensure that they are a champion by saying, how do I make your job easier as a champion? And what happens if you don't get this process right? Yeah. And unfortunately, I mean, I don't know if you want to share this, but like, unfortunately, sometimes their job is on the line. They've been hired because they want to perfect a system or some sort of blocker that they have that's been a go-to-market inefficiency. So they're getting hired to spearhead this initiative to ensure that it's successful. And I pressure test my champion by saying, how are you going to de-risk any blocker that comes into this or any concern that's brought to the table so that you're an expert on how this evaluation is going to run? And I'm an expert in partnering with you to make sure that you get it right. Because at the end of the day, you don't want someone coming to them, back to them in 6 months from now saying, why did we buy this tool?
Caitlin, when in the sales process are you like starting to ask questions and pressure test your champion? Because I have to imagine if Jen is a prospect of mine and she shows up on a discovery call and I'm like, hey, Jen, it's nice to meet you. Boom, boom, boom. She's going to be like, whoa, Nick, what does your product even do? So like at what point do you go from discovery about the situation, challenges, et cetera, to pushing your champion?
That's a great question. And one of the things is there's a fine balance between leveraging your past failures and your past experience and everything that you've happened and getting to the point where you don't want to feel like you're telling your champion what to do, or you're almost coming off like they don't know what they're doing, right? So I always want to position it as my goal. My number one goal is to make your job easier and co-quarterback this whole thing from start to finish. And how I'm aligning that is obviously in a discovery call, obviously in the first one or two meetings, you're going to want to pressure test your champion and say, is there really a problem, a true challenge, and a true need that your company is trying to solve for? You're going to align on what that challenge and that problem might be. Then you'll get to a point where you've established that there's a problem, you've established that there's a true initiative, and now you want to walk your champion through, how are we going to make this successful? And so I'm probably doing it at the end of a first call or maybe even the second call where I've said, okay, we've aligned on the pain, we've aligned on the challenges. Now let's carve out an additional meeting, just the two of us, where we're kind of going to be removing what the pain and the challenges are and really talking about the process itself. And I'll devote an entire meeting to just that.
How do you sell that meeting to the buyer? Is there any time that they're like, wait, what? I'm confused. Like, I'm curious how you voice that over in a meeting.
So I would specifically tell them one of the best ways in order to ensure that we are being the right partners with each other to make this successful is I find it very valuable for you and I to actually carve out an additional 30 minutes to just talk about what the process might look like, identify any gaps, and then really map out what we're going to need from one another and how we're going to hold each other accountable to ensure that this process is successful. I just ask. Full transparency.
Love the transparency. Okay, so let me ask you another what if scenario question, because I just love picking your brain on this stuff. So what if you have a deal that you think, hey, I've seen deals like this before, you prescribe what you believe to the champion is the right course of action, and they push back and kind of stonewall us and say, Caitlin, thanks, I appreciate that, but let me just take this back to my team. And it's early, and you know that is like the kiss of death. What's your talk track for handling that? What do you do in those situations, and why do you do it that way?
So again, this is another great opportunity to pressure test your champion. I like to ask the reasons behind why they're going back to those individuals to ask those specific questions. And the easiest way to do it is just by asking, like, can you walk me through what that type of meeting is going to look like? What types of questions are you going to take back to your internal team? Since we have 10 minutes left in this call, can we actually iron out or maybe discuss some of the apprehensions you have or some of those questions that you think your team is going to come back to you with so that we can get ahead of them? You can tell that there's people who like, they need to digest everything that you've just told them, right? Here's how an evaluation is going to go. This is what the pain is going to look like. Maybe they didn't even understand that they had all this pain in the first place, or they didn't understand they were going to have to bring in X, Y, and Z individuals throughout this process. So it's just like a lot to absorb. So I try and always just say, that's great. I find it most valuable when we can discuss what some of those pushbacks or some of those questions will be up front. Because my goal is to arm you with a response of when some of those blockers or when some of those challenges come up in the meeting that you're going to have.
I love that. I think that is such a nuanced and smart way of saying, let me prepare you for the questions you probably are not anticipating, so that when those questions come up, even though you're not in the room, they're thinking about how you've wired them to answer or respond to those questions. Super smart.
And I do that by sharing. That's when I would then share examples of something that's come up in the past.
What's really smart about this is I usually, to your point, take what the buyer says at face value. Okay, they're going to share this information back with their team. And then I end up sending a PDF with details and I send them a little video. And I'm like, you're making me realize that stuff probably isn't getting shared in the meeting. It might be, but you're asking about like the format of the taking it back to the team. Is it a Slack message they're going to send to somebody? Is it they have a weekly team meeting and this will be one of the items on the agenda? Like, how much time are they going to talk about it? And when you look to the future or make the buyer look to the future with those things, they're like, wait, oh, I know we're going to get asked about this. And then you can coach them on how to sell. But I'm wondering, I share like videos and PDFs and stuff, and I'm wondering about the format of content that you share and the types of content that you share in Deal Cycle to empower your champion to help navigate selling on your behalf, basically.
Absolutely. For me, the biggest thing of arming a champion with the types of materials that are going to help them is sharing some sort of playbook. So there's probably been a playbook for success that maybe your internal enablement team has put together, or your professional services team has put together, or sales engineering team has put together, that has been successful on how to roll out an efficient evaluation. So there's a couple things that I will always leverage of tools. And that is, what is the success criteria playbook look like? The number one thing I'm trying to get from a company that I'm working with is obviously, what's your current state challenges? And what's your current state workflow? And then what does your future state look like for your company? Define what success is going to look like based on the gaps that you're experiencing today. And then I will actually leverage a success criteria playbook, which is just basically a blank template of, hey, if you've never done this before and your company has never actually sat and said, how are we going to build out what our success criteria looks like? It is truly just a standard template that just says, here are the three main things that our company is experiencing challenge. It's a domino effect. These challenges then affect X, Y, and Z individuals. What does success look like in all of these different departments to ensure that we're doing things more efficiently? So I use a lot of success criteria playbooks. I use a lot of mutual action plans by way of working backwards on what an ideal go live date would be. And then I put some assumptions in, hey, we have to run these types of meetings throughout the sales cycle. And that's what I'm leveraging to kind of keep them accountable.
So you've sold into mid-market. You spent years selling into enterprise. Obviously, when you move into enterprise, one of the big challenges for those that haven't sold into it is just the number of people that get involved. Maybe not directly, but indirectly behind the scenes just grows and grows and grows. So one of the things you talked about on the pre-show was the importance of working with your champion to ride shotgun with you the whole way through. Can you say a little bit more about why that's important and then how you do that in places maybe you've in the past thought, hey, I can ride solo on this one, and then learned, you know, alternatively?
What I've come up against in large strategic enterprise cycles is that, again, you're probably meeting with anywhere from 40 to 60 individuals. Personal experience, I met with 80 individuals within a company in order to run a successful evaluation. And what I have found that all different parts of the business that are going to be a part of this decision making or this executive buyer committee is I find that a lot of these teams internally are running siloed systems or processes in order to actually go through their own internal evaluation. And so my job with my champion is to prepare with every single group that we are meeting with to walk through the scenarios of what happens if we walk into this meeting and you've got individuals who don't agree on this in a certain type of solution. What if there's going to be a roadblock that comes up? How are we going to handle those objections? How are we going to ensure that we've been working with X, Y, and Z team? So my goal is to make sure that my champion is a part of every single conversation that I am having with however many people are a part of this buying committee. Because the best way to do that is your champion knows what the number one thing is that you're trying to solve for with that company. And so when you repeat what that challenge is or that pain is, and you hone in on like the essence of why you're even having this evaluation in the first place, every time you meet with a different part of the buying committee or a different facet of the company that's going to be a part of this decision-making process, that's critical. Specifically for large buying committees, the mistake I've made in the past was you work so hard in the first, 6 to 9 months, ensuring that there's the right challenge that you're solving for. Consensus-driven decisions where you're meeting with every type of a buyer or user or decision maker that's going to be a part of this. And then you get to procurement or you get to the final meeting with the CIO, who is basically responsible for allocating resources to actually get this thing up and running. And then you don't have your champion in the room with you. And that's where you can make or break a deal, because those individuals, procurement or IT resources, have no idea about any of the work that you've been doing for 6 to 9 months. So when I say I want to ensure that like a champion is actually co-quarterbacking this entire thing is, I am basically demanding or making the request that that individual and my champion is in every single one of those internal meetings.
I love that. And then last question before we move to final question, how would you position that to your champion? So let's say someone thinks like, oh, okay, I've done all the upfront stuff. Now, Caitlin, you take it from here. How do you actually articulate it? Like if I'm the customer prospect.
So what I would say to my champion is this: I want to ensure that all of the work that you and I have done together and all of the cross-functional teams doesn't go to waste in the past 6 to 9 months. It would suck, right? If you've done all this work and then your champion goes into a meeting, they're not well prepared, and then all that work for the 6 to 9 months goes out the window. So I would say to the champion, I have found that the most successful way to drive this thing to a finish line is to ensure that you are a part of all of these internal conversations moving forward. And the reason for that being is I really want to hone in on the essence of why you're driving this evaluation in the first place and ensure that these individuals, like procurement, like IT, understand that you've done all the critical work alongside our company to make sure that we're going to have a successful partnership.
Boom. Beautiful. This has been a phenomenal interview, Caitlin, but we are running out of time and we got to move to the final question. The final question is this: we have talked about a lot of really great things salespeople should be doing. Now I got to ask you about a shouldn't. And so the last question is, what is one bad habit that you see a lot of salespeople exhibiting that you think they need to break because it hurts them more than it helps?
In this market, I definitely feel like the number one thing that individuals aren't doing and should be leaning in on is asking for referrals and for feedback. A huge part of success in sales and building out trust and building out referrals is just asking your champion or the company that is now hopefully a client what their experience was working with you. It's just going to make you a better seller. So throughout a cycle, you're going to need folks that are going to be references for you. And so I have a pretty simple template that I've put together after I've run a successful deployment. Another major tip, if you want to take it even a step further, is if you're leveraging a reference during a sales cycle, make sure that you are sending them a thank you note for being part of your reference and also letting them know what happens to the actual prospect. So many times I have gone back to someone who's been a reference for me and I've said, hey, just so you know, that conversation was really fruitful. It was a huge part of why they wanted to move forward with us. They've now become a customer. And that other customer or reference has been like, wow, thanks for letting me know. People actually like, I always wondered like what the heck happens to these people. And so an easy framework that I've put together, an email template or an ask that I've said when it comes to gathering feedback or gathering a reference has been really simple. It's basically, hey, customer, thanks for being an incredible partner throughout this evaluation. Super grateful to welcome you into the deal family. Look forward to ensuring that you're going to be successful your entire life cycle with us. As part of the process, I really care about just becoming a better seller. And the best way to do that is asking for feedback asking for you to be a reference if you're open to that. And then do you have any referrals within your own network that you think would benefit from a conversation with us?
Beautiful. Well, I benefited from this conversation with you, Caitlin. Thank you so much for joining us. Everybody stick around for a 60-second recap coming up soon.
Today's prospecting tip is brought to you by Woodpecker. When you're sending a sales email, you generally want to avoid putting punctuation in the subject line. If you've got an exclamation point, it makes it seem like you're shouting at them, look at this amazing offer, and a question mark just smells salesy, so avoid punctuation. Now, if you want to steal my full sales cadence from my friends at Woodpecker, there's a link in the show notes for you to go get it and try it for free.
Your ZoomInfo actionable insight tactic is called Jane's Moving Up. Why? Because that's the email subject line you'll use when you get a real-time notice that your prospect Jane just got promoted. From there, in the email, explain how ZoomInfo helps rising sales leaders win their first 90 days on the job by highlighting coaching opportunities or supporting a team-wide prospecting push. And you can try out this trigger-based email template for prospect promotion and four other scenarios inspired by ZoomInfo's go-to-market plays. Link in the show notes.
Today's show is sponsored by Calendly. If you're interested in accelerating your sales cycle, improving your prospect's experience, and booking more demos, there's one scheduling automation platform on the market that does all three. Calendly offers team-based scheduling, solutions and integrations for every department, and lead routing to instantly book qualified meetings from your website and match known leads to reps based on real-time Salesforce assignment. I find it really helpful when I have to book meetings with multiple people on my side so that I don't have to coordinate everyone's calendars. Get started today by checking out the show notes or Calendly.com. Did you know that 60% of proposals are viewed on a mobile device, which means if you're sending a text doc or a slide deck, the formatting is going to look really ugly and you're going to make a bad impression. Luckily, our friends at Quiller are here to help. Quiller pages are built on the web, which means they're mobile responsive and they actually look good on a cell phone. And Quiller is having an offer right now to upgrade your proposal from an ugly text doc to a Quiller page for free, so you can see what your boring proposal looks like as a beautiful Quiller page. There is a link in the show notes to take advantage of the offer.
Your top four actionable takeaways from this episode with Caitlin Zylstra. Number one, you need to explain things in your customer's language. If your customer looks at data on a monthly basis and your SME normally looks at data on a quarterly basis, it is on you to make sure that your SME adapts the demo or whatever they share to how the customer thinks about things. Your job is to translate for them. Number two, involve your champion in every single customer touch point because they will help share context and help be your co-quarterback for the deal.
Number three, ask your buyer to correct you. When you get to the point of the sale where you're walking through next steps for evaluation, be okay with being corrected. Literally say it out loud. Correct me where I'm wrong here. And number four, when you are inviting an internal call partner to join your meeting, go beyond the basics. Ask questions like, what are the business challenges for the prospect? What executive priority does it tie to? What's the cost of an action? What does success look like? And what role do you want them to play? Nick, how can listeners help us out today?
Well, you can help yourself out by helping yourself out, and that will help us out. And what I mean by that is please go steal the exec prep document that Caitlin put together for you for free. It's free, it's fun, and it'll help you sell more deals. Thanks for listening. It's in the show notes. We'll see you next week on the show.
Today's deal acceleration tip is brought to you by Demandbase. If you want to save a ton of time as a salesperson and be more relevant, I recommend you prioritize your prospecting by those prospects who are showing buyer intent. It'll keep you from making a bunch of noise and reaching out to folks who aren't in market, and instead you'll reach out to folks who are in market. Now, we built a bunch of templates to help you prioritize, accelerate, and win with Demandbase, and there is a link to those wonderful templates in today's show notes. Gong's going to help you run the 5-minute drill at the end of all of your calls today. At the end of a call, pressure test the prospect with 3 questions. Number 1, do you want to buy? If the answer is no, why set a next step at all? Number 2, when do you want to buy? If it's tomorrow, we got to move fast. Number 3, how do you buy? Based on the first 2 answers, I can now adequately decide if and how I set a next step. And this was stolen from the Gong 30 MPC 90-minute masterclass, and you can steal it too in the show notes.